time for a weekly check-in on the top stories in national politics. Congress faces a deadline at the end of the month to fund the government. A bill nearing a vote in the House would allow more legal immigrants convicted of violent crimes to be deported. And journalist Bob Woodward's new book paints a picture of a dysfunctional administration with many in the White House losing faith in the president. Our question for you this week, do you plan to read Woodward's new book, Fear Trump in the White House? Why or why not? Do you think you're likely to trust the book's account of a chaotic administration, or do you have questions, as many members of the Trump administration do, about its accuracy? Do books like this change your opinion? Do you think they change public opinion on the president? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Daniel Neuhauser is a staff correspondent for the National Journal. Dan, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me back.
Well, a lot going on in September in Congress, it looks like, and hanging over the to-do list is the September 30th deadline to fund the government. Here we are again, a government shutdown, I guess, once again, the alternative. How are members of Congress working to avoid that?
Yeah, well, it's that time of the year again. They are facing down a deadline, and it's really coming up quick. This was an abbreviated week already because of the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah. Next week, the House is out. And so that leaves basically one legislative week to fund the entirety of the government. And this year, they're trying to do it a little bit differently. They're trying to go back to regular order, more or less, and do packages of, you know, three bills at a time, three spending bills at a time, dealing with different elements of the federal government, instead of putting on President Trump's desk one big omnibus spending legislation that he has said that he doesn't want to sign anything like that again. So it kind of drags out the process, makes it more slow going, and I'm just not sure that there's enough time, frankly, for them to get it done.
So these are, and I think you introduced me to this phrase last time you were on, Dan, these are mini-bus pieces of legislation they're being called.
That's right. So omnibus would be the entire thing, and mini-bus is the shorthand for, you know, packages of three bills or so. They've only got one done so far, and there's 12 bills to do. So they have one done that handles the military construction and veterans affairs, energy and water, like the Department of Energy and things like that, and Congress's own spending, the legislative branch spending. But they're going to conference now. The House and the Senate are going to start talking about working out their differences on two other minibuses. But it's just, like I said, time is running really short, and there are some really, really controversial issues, particularly that have to do with abortion and health care. They paired together the bill dealing with health spending with the Defense Department bill, kind of hoping that members would be more willing to iron out their differences on a bill dealing with, you know, health care. It's been such a divisive issue on the Hill if they also know that they're voting to fund the Defense Department. So we'll see how that goes. But as it stands right now, House Republicans are, you know, trying to do things like cut funding to Planned Parenthood. They want to include language in the bill to allow doctors to sue if they're forced to perform abortions, a ban on research using fetal tissue, and another measure allowing faith-based adoption agencies to decline to place children with gay couples. So you can see, you know, social issues really rearing their head here, and it's just not clear that they're going to be able to work out these very controversial differences before the deadline.
Now, it's election season. Everybody in the House is up for re-election, a third of the Senate. Does this make members of Congress kind of timid? Am I going to vote on something that's going to be an attack ad against me tomorrow? Congressperson so-and-so voted for or against this vital thing?
Well, more than timid, let me give you an example. Representative Ron DeSantis, who's running for governor in Florida, resigned the other day. And the kind of joke around Capitol Hill is that he'd rather resign than have to vote on another omnibus because he's running for re-election. He's running for election in the governor's race in Florida. I mean, voting for some of these things, it's like a black mark on your record when in the eyes of conservatives. It's just basically a gigantic bill, all aspects of the federal government funded in it, and there's just going to be some things that you don't like in there, one way or the other. So it just opens you up to political attack and saying, oh, you voted to fund this thing or that thing or not fund this thing or that thing. And so members often, a lot of members, particularly House Republicans, try to avoid it and vote against these things.
Hey, speaking of huge pieces of legislation, Dan, the Farm Bill is up there. There's a deadline coming up for reauthorization of that. A lot in that bill that affects us here in Wisconsin, of course. Where are we on that?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. They're working in conference. They have been since last month. But it's been pretty tight-lipped, so we don't know exactly what the goings-on are day-to-day. We do know that the biggest hurdle remains the work requirements that House Republicans have tried to impose on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as food stamps. They want to require most adults who are in the program, including some parents who have children under the age of six and older workers up to the age of 60, to prove every month that they worked or participated in a work program for at least 20 hours a week or qualified for an exemption. And that is just a non-starter for Democrats. But even Senate Republicans do not want to do that. I think for the most part, even if they are ideologically simpatico with House Republicans here, they don't want to open up that can of worms knowing that it could jeopardize farm subsidies, especially when farmers, as you all know out in Wisconsin, are hurting enough.
Talking to Dan Neuhauser from the National Journal, looking at some of the big stories in national politics right now. Want to turn to this Bob Woodward book, Fear, Trump in the White House. And I sold 750,000 copies on day one. It's been news since before it came out. Want to invite listeners, are you going to buy and or read this book? Let us know why or why not at 800-642-1234. Dan, at least for Washington reporters, this book is getting a lot of attention. Do you think that a lot of people in the political world there in D.C. are looking at this thing, wondering what's going to come out, what's true, what's not true?
I mean, absolutely. And it's not just political reporters. I think Barnes & Noble said the other day that this is the fastest-selling book since Harper Lee's Go Set a Watchman, which was, you know, obviously a huge literary event. So this is in and of itself a momentous book. Woodward has written a book about every president since Nixon. You know, it's nine presidents, and whenever he talks and whenever he writes, more specifically, people listen, people read it. He has great sources. He has he's one of the most respected, if not the most respected, newspaper reporter in the country. And I think everybody is just waiting for, you know, the next revelation to come out.
What are some of the things that have caught your eye so far and what's been released from the book in advance?
Well, there's some pretty troubling stories about relating to foreign policy. For instance, a month after Trump became president, he wanted to plan a preemptive strike on North Korea. He ordered Defense Secretary James Mattis to assassinate Bashar Assad, the president of Syria, and the fact is, maybe the most troubling thing about it, and something that a lot of critics have honed in on, is that we seem to be in a sort of constitutional crisis where, if what is in this book is to be believed, the president's own aides do not think that he is able to lead the country. They don't think that he's smart, frankly. They don't think that he's sane, according to the book. And they often just don't listen to him. Like, of course, Jim Mattis, when he was told to assassinate Assad, essentially just didn't. Another one is an economic advisor, Gary Cohn, basically taking pieces of paper that Trump was supposed to sign related to trade off of his desk because he thought it was bad policy and it would precipitate a trade war, and Trump not noticing. So, you know, it's very troubling stuff, and basically you can just add it to the pile of other, troubling reports coming out of the White House.
Now, some cabinet members and others in the White House have denied saying what they're quoted as saying. President Trump responded in a tweet saying, quote, "The Woodward book is a scam. I don't talk the way I'm quoted. If I did, I would not have been elected president. These quotes are made up." Woodward responded to some of those criticisms on the Today Show this week. Here's a listen.
The people I talked to, I insisted be very specific about the incidents, exactly what happened. And as I've said, and I think this is important, the building blocks of journalism are specific events what happened on this day, who said what, and this is a volume of Trump talking and acting and deciding.
Now, we had a previous book, Michael Wolff's Fire and Fury. Omarosa Manigault Newman had her book out after her time in the White House. Do you think a Bob Woodward book carries more weight?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, in both of those cases, there were, you know, some credibility questions raised. With Bob Woodward, he is essentially unimpeachable. I mean, he has been doing this for a long time with a lot of people. You know, he doesn't need to make up quotes to make money. He's got plenty, frankly. And he is known to be meticulous, and he keeps records, he keeps recordings, he has a paper trail for everything that he puts in the book. So when he writes something, he's so well regarded that you can pretty much take it to the bank.
Talking to Dan Neuhauser from the National Journal about some of the week's top news in politics. You can weigh in at 800-642-1234 on the Bob Woodward book. Are you planning to read the book? Have you bought it yet or got it on hold at the library yet? Have you seen details from the book that have you worried, or are you skeptical about the book? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Dan Neuhauser from the National Journal, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. We asked you if you're planning on reading the book, what you thought about the Bob Woodward book. Kevin in Richland Center weighed in. Kevin says Woodward knows from his work on Watergate what free speech is all about. He understands that not even the president can avoid the watchful eye of the press. Kevin says, glad he's continuing to search for the truth. On a related, maybe related note, Dan, there have been a bunch of polls out over the last week or so showing the president's poll numbers slipping, not a huge amount, but into the sub-40 approval category. Democratic-Republican generic ballots swinging more in favor of Democrats. From what you've seen, is this a worrisome moment for Republicans?
Yeah, Republicans are incredibly worried. In the House, the scoop has been for the last couple of months already that they are Republicans in serious danger of losing their majority in the House. But now, with the president's numbers slipping, there's some talk that even the Senate could go, which would really be momentous. I mean, Democrats are defending way, way more seats in the Senate this year than Republicans are. So if Republicans were able to win, it would mean tough races in Florida, maybe even Texas, being taken by Democrats. So they are trying to get out there on the campaign trail. The House Republicans are, like I said, not spending a lot of time here this month. So that means that their candidates can get out there and campaign. In the Senate, it's actually going to be the opposite. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, said he's going to try to keep the Senate in session through October because part of the reason is, I guess, a political strategy that if he keeps them here, more Democrats who are facing reelection are going to be here in D.C. rather than back home campaigning.
Let's bring on a caller. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I haven't read the book yet, but I've been listening to Bob Woodward interviews on all kinds of television shows. Especially Stephen Colbert and Rachel Maddow, and his methodology is meticulous. And let's face it, there's no Trump behavior that I've heard of in the book that sounds out of the ordinary Trump behavior. Just absolutely third, fourth grade level, and pretty ignorant of what's going on around him.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. Dan, is it possible that, okay, this book is going to confirm what people who already don't like Donald Trump already thought about him, and if people do support the president, they'll be able to dismiss it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's already been happening. You look at Trump's concerted attacks on media, vaunted media institutions like the New York Times, the Washington Post. He has made it a centerpiece of his presidency to discredit media institutions and frankly the media as a whole. So for him to go after Woodward, it's not even a surprise. But he may have met his match here. Your caller just said, Woodward has a great reputation. Now, are people who already support Trump and are already primed to think that everything that any media person says about Trump that's negative is a lie going to believe Woodward? Probably not. But you know, that's not really Woodward's intent. He can't force anyone to believe him. He is trying to tell a story and tell the truth, and that's the best that he can do. If people believe it, they're going to believe it.
Thanks for that call. Dan, I want to move on to another issue now that you've been writing about. A bill nearing a vote in the House would allow more legal immigrants convicted of violent crimes to be deported. Can you give us some background on why we're here?
Yeah, actually, they did vote on this last week.
Oh, they did vote. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was a very interesting bill, and I was actually surprised it didn't get more press. This stems from an April Supreme Court ruling that found that the federal definition of a quote crime of violence is unconstitutionally vague. There was a gentleman who was a legal immigrant from the Philippines who was convicted twice of burglary, and the federal government tried to initiate deportation proceedings against him. This went all the way again to the Supreme Court, and they basically said that the immigration law that allows the federal government to deport non-citizens for these so-called crimes of violence didn't give a good enough definition of what is a crime of violence. Is burglary a crime of violence? Is this? Is that? So after that happened, the president tweeted that the Congress should do something about it to change the definitions, and here Congress did. They basically voted to, you know, restore the federal government's ability to deport immigrants for all kinds of violent criminal offenses. Now, the problem is that Democrats thought that the process was bad. There were no hearings on this bill, no witnesses, and essentially you're making a major change to criminal law without fully considering the implications. For instance, if I'll dig into this, what they did is they took the law and said, here are crimes of violence, burglary, murder, sexual assault, this and that, and they listed all these different ones. A lot of them, obviously, murder is, of course, a violent crime. But some of them were, Democrats thought, a little dubious. For instance, fleeing. You know, they thought it might give a little too much leeway to the police to charge somebody with, you know, a violent crime if they are simply evading arrest, or maybe they're looking for a place to park but going too fast while being chased by a patrolman or something like that. So just they really wanted to kind of flush out these potential issues, and they really felt that it didn't get a fair hearing.
Right. Everybody, it seems like, generally agreed, yeah, this law could use some clarification. Most of these crimes would certainly fit the bill, but they're worried that it there could be some unintended consequences. That was the objection?
Absolutely. And you know, just the speed with which it happened, they don't think that members who were voting on this bill fully understood what it was and what it did. Again, this wasn't just a change to immigration law. This was a change to federal statute, the criminal statute that governs all crimes. So if you do that, do you open up, anybody to increased prosecution for crimes that, whether or not they're violent might actually be in question? They wanted to at least talk about it. And this comes, especially in an era when people are trying to, or at least talking about and a little bit more receptive to criminal justice reform with the aim of, you know, reducing our prison population. So they were wondering, you know, is this going to actually be a step in the wrong direction?
Talking to Dan Neuhauser from the National Journal, looking at some big stories in national politics. Former President Obama returned to the campaign trail last weekend in a speech where he criticized President Trump by name for the first time, apparently, also with a critique for Republican lawmakers. Here's a listen.
Republicans who know better in Congress, and they're there, they're quoted saying, yeah, we know this is kind of crazy, are still bending over backwards to shield this behavior from scrutiny or accountability or consequence. Seem utterly unwilling to find the backbone to safeguard the institutions that make our democracy work.
Obama admits he's breaking the tradition for ex-presidents to criticize the sitting president. Vice President Pence criticized him for that reason. Do we know why he's back in and now?
Well, I think it's pretty clear he believes that we're in a pivotal moment in American history. He thinks the Trump administration is not just a regular administration that he could have policy differences with, but that it's actually detrimental to the country. So he's going out there and he's taking on Trump. And, you know, the significance of this really can't be understated. Can't be overstated. He remains the single biggest figure for Democrats in the absence of any other really major political national figures for the party. Hillary Clinton lost. She's doing her part, but she doesn't have the credibility of a former president. And there hasn't really been somebody to step up and fill the void of a Democratic president, the gravitas that brings. So him going out there for candidates and to counter Trump head on by name, that's really a big deal.
Is he seen as a difference maker? I think he's been in California, among other places. Is he seen as a difference maker in those districts that people see as being vulnerable to switching from Republican to Democrat? We keep hearing about your suburban districts, for example.
Yeah, it really depends on the district. I mean, if he's in California, I think that will be helpful. If he goes to, say, eastern Kentucky, I'm not so sure. Some of those districts, you're going to have to rely on Republicans who, maybe voted for Trump last time, maybe sat out on the election, to be so horrified by what's going on that they're going to want to vote for you. And it's not clear that Obama is going to move the needle for some of those people. Now, where he could be extremely helpful is in riling up the base. I mean, he remains still incredibly popular with the Democratic base. And if you're trying to get out the vote and increase, your base voting, like he's doing, the former First Lady Michelle Obama is doing, the former president and his wife are going to make a difference there.
Dan, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Anytime.
Dan Neuhauser is a staff correspondent for the National Journal. He joined us to recap some of the week's biggest stories in politics, as we do every Wednesday here on Central Time.